Yeah, calling out to all pro-choice people. If you're a pro-choice person and you want to defend that position or explain that position or challenge us on our pro-life position, this is the hour for you, 888-318-7884. We know if you had a radio show, you'd give us a chance to talk about why we're pro-life. So we want to give you a chance to talk about why you're pro-choice, 888-318-7884. Our guest for the hour is Stephanie Gray. She's the author of Love Unleashes Life. And she has a website, Love Unleashes Life. She's also an internationally renowned pro-life speaker, and you can see why she is. I mean, even if you're a pro-choice person, you can see Stephanie is very, very good at what she does. What you probably don't know is during the breaks, she plays your ukulele and sings songs to us, which is kind of awesome. Oh, you're not going to do it now. Just, no, you cannot play ukulele now.
I'm just
going
to tempt people with the image of Big Joy.
Oh, that's the name
of
your...
This is my concert ukulele. I have a smaller one, a soprano, which is Little Joy. I travel with Little Joy in my laptop bag. So if people want a show, then they just have to bring me to an event and she might make an appearance.
All right. The pro-life ukulelist. I don't know if that's what you call someone who plays a ukulele, but... okay, so...
No, it helps lighten the atmosphere. Things get intense with all the abortion discussion. You pull out a ukulele, you can't help but be happy.
Be happy. You made all of us happy here with your renditions, by rendering a rendition for us. When we went to the break, however, Anonymous was on the line. I personally was having trouble following Anonymous's arguments because Anonymous, I'll be honest with you, one of the kind of ways that you speak about these things is you refer to philosophical theories that I'm sure Stephanie knows because she does this all the time, but I don't know some of them. But I wanted to go back to you, give you another chance to engage in conversation with Stephanie because I think it's great for all of us. But where did we leave you, Anonymous? What did you want to say to Stephanie?
Okay, so yeah. So basically the onus of responsibility, that's basically the whole point of this argument. And it also contains Judith Jarvis Thompson's violinist argument. So in that argument, the one who's hooked up is not the one who's ultimately responsible. So the violinist is a result of the kidnappers and the Society of Music Lovers. I'm not sure you're familiar with that argument.
Yeah, we've had that argument on the air before. But so I just would like you to make your argument so we have a compact argument. I am pro-choice because, and give it to us, and then we can get Stephanie to respond to that.
Okay, so the argument would be, I am pro-choice because abstinence and the use of contraception during sex justify abortion.
On what basis?
So, because the foundation of why we're abstaining and using contraception is because we care more about the quality of our own lives rather than the sanctity of the lives that would have existed if we didn't engage in those activities.
All right, I'm just going to ask you to respond to that, Stephanie. I do think that's as clear as we are going to get the argument.
Okay, I think I would say that regardless of the motivations that cause someone to want to avoid pregnancy, the question becomes, once pregnancy occurs, what do we do now? What is the most ethical response in the presence of a human being that didn't previously exist? And once we have a human, it is not ethical to end a human's life, regardless of whether we want that human or not, feel affection for that human or not, are convenienced or inconvenienced by that human or not, because human rights are grounded in being human, not the circumstances of the adult, more mature humans around that vulnerable, more weak human, namely the preborn child. I think there certainly are things people might need to explore in their own heart, which is a receptivity and an openness to the beauty and the gift of human life. And so that is why, and we only touched on it briefly earlier, but the Catholic Church, and I would say Christian denominations in general, if they really dive into the scriptures, should be able to come to a conclusion that contraception ought to be rejected because it is engaging in a life-creating act, but changing the very nature of that act by suppressing the fertility, which is inherent to it and a rejection of the creation of life. But there's a difference between rejecting the creation of life, which is still a problem in contraceptive sex, but there's a difference between that and rejecting life, which is already created, and destroying it, which would be an act of abortion. And just because someone engages in sex that is contracepted or avoids sex to avoid pregnancy, in either situation, someone's thinking, well, I just don't want a baby right now. Once a baby comes into existence, if they get pregnant, there's a responsibility to not end that baby's life and to care for that baby.
Thank you, Anonymous. Lots of folks on the line, so I will keep moving. You're welcome to call anytime. However, 888-318-7884, our number if you're a pro-choice person and you'd like to share with us why you are pro-choice. You're welcome here. Savannah in Louisiana, listening on 690 AM. You are up next. Savannah, why are you pro-choice?
Hi. I'm pro-choice because, for me personally, I don't think it's for me to determine somebody's decisions in life. Personally, if I did have a child, like I was pregnant, and personally, I would not abort it because, you know, I feel viable that I'd keep a kid. I could keep a kid and keep it safe. But for a stranger or anyone else who, you know what, they might not have the same resources, if they are not able to care for this child and they feel like foster care is a lot far worse than debt, then I will support them in their choice of not carrying a baby or not caring to full term. And I just, because that's a thing where, you know, unfortunately, we do not live in a perfect world where everyone has this, all the resources in the world to keep a child safe and keep it from harm. And I have all my notes here. I was writing stuff down.
Well, let's Stephanie respond.
Sure.
We'll make it a conversation.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm fine going back and forth to the extent that you are. If I could ask you this, you know, if someone were to come across to you, if I were, for example, to come across to you and say, look, I am convicted deeply that slavery is wrong, and I can tell you with great clarity that I myself will never own a slave. But if I follow that up with the statement, I just can't judge someone else. If they are in a situation where they're incapable of paying for hired help the way I'm capable of paying for hired help, but they don't have the financial means to hire someone, but they still need help. If they want to enslave another human, then I'm not going to stop them. That's their right. How would you respond to me if I said that to you?
That they're saying that slavery is right?
Well, I'm saying that I personally would never own a slave, and I have the money to hire someone without enslaving them. But if you wanted to own a slave because you don't have the money to hire someone, but you need help, so you're going to enslave someone, that's your right. I'm going to let you do that, even though I will never myself own a slave. How would you respond? Would you find that a morally objectionable position to hold?
You know, well, almost. Because that is that there's that opinion that, you know, well, like, I personally, I'm not, like, I think that slavery is absolutely wrong. It is that there's people who have opinions, especially from where I'm from, where that, you know, there are people more superior than others. If, you know, I guess I keep my pro-choice, like, I guess I keep that opinion separate from abortion and slavery, because I don't, yes, I would say that it's wrong to enslave somebody.
And do you think we should have laws against slavery so that no one is allowed to own a slave? Okay, so therefore, it sounds to me like you recognize if my reason for not owning a slave is that it harms an innocent human being, then that's a serious enough reason to prevent everyone from owning a slave by having laws against slavery. So if we can accept that, then correspondingly, I would take that idea and say, okay, if I, or it sounds like you, personally would never have an abortion because you and I are convinced that abortion ends the life of a human being, then isn't that a serious enough reason to prevent anyone from having an abortion? Because in a civil society, we should have laws that prevent people from ending the lives of innocent human beings. What do you think?
Yes, but on a note that, you know, what a fetus is feeding off the mother. It is technically not, it's not living by itself. It's living through its mom. It's getting its nutrients. It's getting everything it needs from the mom. So...
Correct. Does that make the mom less responsible or more responsible for the child?
It's responsible for it, but it's also she has the right to her own life to have the responsibility of saying, you know, it's almost like if like thinking of a mom thinking of, should I have this baby? It's, am I able to take care of it? Is someone else going to be able to help me take care of it? Or wouldn't it be just better to, you know, abort it and just abort it? Because it maybe it's affecting her life. It might be affecting her health. Because two callers ago, you know, his mom was having health problems, and it was probably financial problems. And unfortunately, we do live in a world where we might not have enough resources. And if we lived in a perfect world where there was, you know, all right, no one did wrong, you know, absolutely, I would be, you know what, maybe don't abort your child, maybe take it to a family that needs it.
Now, Savannah, you're using the term abortion. Could you please define it for me? What does it mean to abort your child?
It's to abort your child is to, you know, unfortunately, bad word, unfortunately, kill.
Yeah,
kill.
Okay.
So if that's, we're clear on what we're talking about here, then it sounds to me like you're saying a mother has a right to decide to kill her child if she feels she cannot care for her child. Is that accurate?
Yeah, in a sense, yep.
Because would you agree with me that doesn't sound good when we really define it as it is defined? Does that make you uncomfortable? It makes me uncomfortable.
Okay. Well, then, like, there's like many things. Like, well, we can't kill all living things, and unfortunately, there's that too. Again, this
so
is not,
I mean, go on.
You know, I just lost my train of thought. Shoot,
oh, well. Sorry.
Like, so my thing, it's like I think it comes in stages. Like, it's all right. So it's the mother's right. Because the fetus is feeding off the mother, and essentially that's the mother's choice. As going back
so,
to, you know...
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Stephanie, I'm going to... If you don't mind hanging on, caller, I have to take a quick break, Savannah. Can we continue this conversation just a little bit on the other side?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, thank you so much. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Savannah and Stephanie Gray. The topic this hour, why are you pro-choice? There's still a few lines open, 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. On the phone, Savannah in Louisiana. The topic this hour, and you're still welcome to get in on this if you are a pro-choice person, is why are you pro-choice? We'd like to have a conversation with you about it. If you're pro-choice, we don't hide the fact that we're pro-life people. We don't try to be sneaky about it. We just want to have robust conversations. And anybody's welcome to call. If you don't believe me, if you're like, nah, they won't take my call, just try it. Try calling 888-318-7884. You'll talk to Marie, and you will get you right on the air. Not before we talk to Savannah again, however. I didn't want to cut you off too quick there, Savannah. So if I'll try to sum up, and you, if you fill in anything I'm missing, but the basic point that you're making is that the child is using the mother's resources early in life. And that the mother has a right to say no to that, and so she can take the life of the child. Am I in the ballpark? Is that about right? Savannah?
Yes. Well, Well, it's either the mother's resources or it's the world's resources. And if we do not have enough resources to care of a child, then yes, the woman has the right to abort the baby.
Stephanie.
So, you know, I would respond, Savannah, by saying that we're talking about a human being. And the question is, when we have born children who feel we're not adequately supporting, do we ever justify ending the lives of those human beings? If you have someone who's happy to be pregnant, but when the child is 5 years old, they are no longer properly caring for the child, would you justify ending a five-year-old child's life? If not, then why justify ending a preborn child's life? And when you talk about the child feeding off the mother, yes, in a sense, the mother is solely responsible for caring for the child in a way you or I can't. But I would suggest that makes her more responsible, not less. And this little thought experiment might help. Imagine you're trained in first aid and you know the Heimlich maneuver, and you're at a restaurant eating food, and you notice there's a whole table of paramedics also eating food, and then you notice someone in the restaurant begins to choke. Now, let's say even though you're trained in the Heimlich maneuver, you don't get up and you don't help the choking person because you see that table of paramedics. And indeed, several of them get up, they help the choking person, and the person doesn't die. Now, you haven't done anything, but we wouldn't say that you've done something wrong through your inaction because many other people could and did help. But let's change the story. Let's imagine you're not in a restaurant. Let's imagine you're at a home, your own home, with just one friend, and you're skilled in first aid, and you know the Heimlich maneuver. And let's say your friend that you're eating with begins to choke. There's no one else around to help your friend. You're the only person who can help your friend. You know what to do, and let's say you don't do it, and your friend chokes and dies. Now, in this scenario, you've been inactive, just like the first scenario, but have you done something wrong this time? And I think we'd say yes. So then I would ask, what is the difference between your inaction in the first thought experiment and your inaction in the second one? And the difference is, in the first scenario, many other people could help. It lessened your responsibility. In the second scenario, no one else could help. Therefore, it heightened your responsibility, and you did something wrong by not helping the choking person. So in the same way, when you talk about the preborn child feeding off the mom and relying on the mom and really can only survive with the mom, I'm not capable of helping that preborn child. The fact that only the mom can help the baby in the womb doesn't lessen the mom's responsibility. It heightens the mom's responsibility. And therefore, if she feels that when the child is born, she cannot meet the child's needs, then the solution is not homicide through abortion, but the solution is adoption or fostering. And indeed, people can be rightly concerned about the foster care system, but there's a way to avoid the foster care system. It's called adoption. So instead of placing kids in foster care because we refuse to relinquish them and we want them to be bounced back and forth between us and some other home, why don't we say, out of a self-sacrificing love, I will immediately place my child into an adoptive home because there are couples waiting for newborn infants and the child avoids the foster care system. So that's what I would suggest is a solution that would be the opposite of homicide, which you've been suggesting.
Savannah, I'm going to have to leave it there. There are quite a few people who want to get on. Thank you for the call. Our topic, why are you pro-choice? Open lines for just pro-choice people today. 888-318-7884. Bob in Canada, you're next. You're up in the same country Stephanie's in. Bob's listening on EWTN Channel 130 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Bob, why are you pro-choice?
Well, I think I'm pro-choice. I don't favor the criminalization of abortion, even though I do believe it's an immoral and unethical act. In secular society, I don't think that it should be criminalized. And that is because I have this notion that the same radical freedom that allows a woman's right to be balanced against the right of the fetus and to determine that that woman's right has precedence, and for her to choose to use that freedom is the same radical freedom that allows me to pursue my Catholic faith, to go to church, to believe what the church teaches, including the immorality of abortion and including the belief that human life begins at conception. So I have to say that I'm pro-choice because I don't believe that we should spend our time trying to change the laws of the land. I think that we need to focus our time in trying to change the hearts of the nation.
Stephanie?
And
Bob, if I could ask you a question, would that be okay?
Bob?
Yes?
Could I ask you a question to clarify
something?
So you yourself have mentioned, obviously you're Catholic, you believe abortion is immoral, that life begins at fertilization. Why is abortion immoral?
It's immoral because it's the taking of human life.
Okay. So I think, therefore, it would be safe to say that you are against the taking of a human life.
I believe it's immoral.
Okay. So do you believe it should be unlawful to take the life of a born human, or just immoral but lawful?
I believe it should be unlawful.
Okay. So if you believe that we should have laws against homicide, an act which you also believe is immoral, but you believe it should also be unlawful, then wouldn't it also follow that since abortion is just a type of homicide and that it's ending the life of a human being, that we should have laws against that as well?
Well, I think homicide is really a legal term, isn't it? I don't think that it's actually a moral term, but I think,
well, to kill a human, manslaughter is where we're getting into legal territory, but hum would be referring to the human and side would be to kill. So to kill a human, when it comes to born humans, it sounds to me like you think we should have laws. So I'm curious why you don't think we should have laws when it comes to preborn humans, if in both situations it's killing a human.
Because in law, you have to balance the rights of individuals. So it's not always absolute. So in the case of an unborn child, you're balancing that woman's right to decide what happens to her own body against the unborn child's right to live. And so when you are balancing those two rights, it's a very difficult thing to do, but you have to choose which right takes precedence.
All right, Stephanie.
Okay, what if you have a born child who cannot have formula and is in a situation where the only person they're with is their biological mother whose breast milk is produced, and she refuses to feed her born child who then dies by starvation? Should that be considered unlawful?
No, that's unethical, because in the situation that you're cooking up there, that is the situation where there is no law. People would be in the jungle, or people would be, I mean, you're setting up a straw man. So it would be unethical.
What I'm trying to demonstrate,
because I'm pretty sure that if there were police there to arrest them, that they'd have milk for the baby and some other things. So that's not really a rational argument in my view.
Well, but Bob, what I'm trying to demonstrate is that you have made a point that abortion in your mind should not be against the law because the child is somehow dependent specifically on the mom's body. And I'm trying to demonstrate that if you have a born child who is dependent on the mom's or someone else's body, and that person does not meet the needs of that child, we would consider it that there should be laws against them harming the life of that child. Quite frankly, even if we're not talking about a mother breastfeeding her child, no baby will live without someone else's body. My arms are needed to pick the baby up, feed the baby with formula, burp the baby, change the baby. You must use your body to care for a born child. And if we believe there should be laws against killing a born child, then there should be laws against killing a preborn child. I'm hearing music. I think we need to go to a break.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Stephanie. You are right. We do need to go to a break. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-31-TRUTH. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour's for you.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Every Catholic has heard the challenge. How can you believe that? Don't you know the Bible says? It's a challenge we have to meet. If we can't reconcile apparent contradictions between Scripture and Catholic teaching, how can our faith survive? And if we can't answer our Protestant brothers and sisters, how will they ever come to embrace the fullness of the faith? In Meeting the Protestant Challenge, apologist Carlo Broussard gives you the knowledge and tools you need to answer 50 of the most common Bible-based objections to Catholicism. Be prepared to give an answer. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Challenge today by calling 844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team asks, how do you honor God in your workplace?
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Tomorrow we got 2 hours of open forum at Jimmy Akin. So if you've been patiently leaving the phone lines open because you wanted pro-choice people to get in and make their calls tomorrow, boop. Anything you got, any question at all for Jimmy Akin. Will there be any special music tomorrow, Nick, or possibly what? We'll see what, if we can play somewhat. some groovy music. All right, so possibly there will be groovy music. But when Jimmy's here, a vast, wide array of questions are welcome. And so yeah, if you got anything, bring it tomorrow. And thanks for letting the pro-choice folks get in.
I think you should make it ukulele music.
Oh,
that's
I think
groovy.
I think we've had plenty of ukulele music during the breaks. That's Stephanie Gray. Stephanie Gray, one of the great defenders of the pro-life position in the world today. We're very proud and happy to have her on here. If you'd like to share with her, explain to her why you are pro-choice, 888-318-7884. Look, here's the deal. You don't get to have very many conversations where you get to talk with smart people on the other side about why they hold the position they do. As a matter of fact, in my view, I don't know if this is Stephanie's view, most of the media is avoiding this conversation. They'd love to not have this conversation, but we want to have it. And so if you're a pro-choice person, really, you're very welcome here. We will take the call. There's four lines open right now. And if you're thinking, nah, they won't take my call, try it. 888-318-7884. Recently, Stephanie, I'm going to go to callers, pro-choice callers, but I did want to ask you about you were in Mexico doing a life debate down in Mexico.
Yes, this is an amazing event called CDI, La Cuida de las Ideas, and it's basically like TED Talks in Latin America. So it was not a Catholic event, it was not a pro-life event, it was a totally secular event, and there were talks on everything from architecture to artificial intelligence to a debate on abortion. Every year they do a debate, and this year it was on abortion. And so it was, I believe, a never before been done style of debate in which it was eight women. So it was four on each side. I was up against Maggie Krell, who is a lawyer with Planned Parenthood, Mara Clark, who works to get abortion overseas, and a couple other women. And then I was on a panel of pro-life women representing the pro-life side, including Toni McFadden, who was sharing her own experience of having had an abortion and regretting it. And so it was just an amazing opportunity to articulate the pro-life perspective to what I would say is my ideal audience, which is a very secular audience to proclaim the pro-life message to. So
is
people can learn more.
I was going to ask
if it's
available.
Yeah, it's
online. Oh, okay, cool.
Yes. So if people can go to my website, loveunleasheslife.com. And from there, whether it's my blog or my ministry updates, they can see the link. Or just go to YouTube, type in CDI and abortion debate, and it should come up.
Up next, Christina in Boise, Idaho. Christina, why are you pro-choice?
Hi. Well, it's such a complicated topic. And for myself personally, I have never done it, and I probably will. I will never do it. But the reason why I'm also a very strict vegan, and I also believe that if we're talking about a fetus versus, say, an animal, animals one feel pain, and there's some debate about very young fetuses feeling pain, but animals as well can feel scared. And have that ability. So one of the big thought experiments of the pro-choice movement is the violinist. This thought experiment really talks about, let's say there's a violinist, this world-class violinist, and he is dying. Do you have a moral obligation to use your body to keep this violinist alive? And the question of that is, Do you have a moral obligation to use your own body to keep another being alive?
What's the answer, Stephanie? How do we address that?
It's a good question. I would say, in general, we do not have a moral obligation to keep, for example, the violinist alive. But I would say that parents do have a moral obligation to keep their minors alive, that when a child is incapable of caring for themselves, parents have a responsibility to meet their child's basic needs. And those basic needs vary based on the age of the child. And so because a preborn child, there is only one environment for that child to be in, namely the mother's womb. That womb is designed more for the woman's offspring than for herself. She can live without her uterus, but her offspring cannot. That's the environment a mother's offspring needs at that stage of development, and it's the basic care required to keep one's child alive. And just as a parent has to use their body to keep their born child alive by feeding, clothing, and sheltering their child until until their child is capable of living independently. A woman has a responsibility as a mother to continue with a pregnancy to provide the food and shelter, in a sense, required for that child at that stage of development. What would your reply to that be?
Well, so either you have a moral obligation to keep other people alive, or you don't. And there's
well,
not
to keep
a
your
line
children
that
alive.
Understand and say that you do or not have a moral obligation to keep anyone alive. And if you don't have a moral obligation to keep anyone alive, then why would you have a moral obligation to keep a fetus? It seems terribly hypocritical. Well, particularly if anyone that is a Christian, the Bible very clearly talks about animals having a right, particularly Bedlam's ass, which is very particular, that God gave this animal the ability to speak, and that
I think I'm missing something. I just I have to because I I'm not a professional at this like you are, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting the animal connection, but I also am not sure. Are you saying parents don't have an obligation to keep their children alive?
Well, we're talking about just is there a moral obligation to keep other beings alive? If they're use your own body. If you do not have a moral obligation to keep other beings alive, then you don't have a moral obligation to keep any other being alive.
So I think, Christina, the question we have to ask is, do parents have a responsibility to meet the basic needs of their offspring? And this will demonstrate that. There are people likely starving in your city and mine. It is nice of us to go and feed them. But if you and I do not go feed starving people in our city, we won't be arrested and put in prison for neglect. But if you or I have children in our home who are our children, and we refuse to feed our children in our home, we will be arrested and charged with neglect, because civil societies expect parents have a responsibility to meet the basic needs of their children. And so if I would be charged with neglect for failing to feed my born child, I ought to be charged with neglect for failing to feed my preborn child. Do you see the difference between parental responsibility to meet offspring's basic needs versus helping a stranger?
Then you really kind of start pushing the limits and saying then you really do have a moral obligation to be forced to donate a kidney or donate a part of your liver, or where do you draw the line and say,
okay, that's a good question. Where do you draw the line?
You draw the line at parental responsibility to meet basic needs. Giving your kidney to someone, donating your blood to someone is not basic care that humans need to grow and mature through the stages of human development. I have kidneys in my body. You have kidneys in your body. We have blood in each of our bodies, and our bodies are designed, those parts are designed for the body in which they're in. But the uterus is different from the kidney. The uterus is different from the blood, and it's a unique body part in that it exists more for the offspring than it exists for oneself. My kidneys exist in my body for my body, but every single month my uterus is telling me it's getting ready for someone else's body. Every single month my uterine lining is getting thick in expectation, not for my body, but for the implantation of someone else's body. And I get a period precisely because another body didn't appear in my body. But the fact that my body was preparing, my uterus was preparing for the implantation of my offspring indicates it's a unique body part from the kidney, the blood, and all these other things, in that it exists more for offspring than for myself. And they can therefore claim a right to it in a way my offspring cannot claim a right to my kidneys or my blood.
I'm going to have to leave it there because we have to take a break. Christina, thank you very much. There are a ton. Now, why'd y'all wait till the last 20 minutes? Every line full now to talk to Stephanie. I'll just say that to you, Stephanie, so that we can try to move quickly through folks when we come back. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Why Are You Pro-Choice with Stephanie Gray.
Hi, this is Trevor Williams from the Pittsburgh Pirates, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I worked in pro baseball for a long time, and we play on Sundays. And it was an easy excuse. I took the easy out and just didn't go to Mass. Got caught up in that whole selfishness, that whole, you know, I can do it all. The times when I was struggling were the times I needed God the most. And now that I've come back and accepted God, my world has completely changed.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Why are you pro-choice? Our topic this hour, Stephanie Gray, our guest. If you want to know more about Stephanie, you want to find out what she does, where you can hear her speaking, how you can get her to come and speak at your event or parish or organization, you just go to loveunleasheslife.com. That's right, loveunleasheslife.com.
Yes, you got it.
And if you want her book, the book is called Love Unleashes Life as well.
I try to keep things streamlined.
I know, really. Love Unleashes Life 2 will be the next book, and it's going to be a whole series.
I'm working on the next book, but it will have a different title, I promise.
All right. It'll be like Love Unleashes Life, The Endgame.
I'm trying to, like, you know how this life unleashes love. No, oh, that'll be way too confusing.
All right, we better go to callers. I don't know. I think I might be a little punchy. I'm not sure. Paula,
I know we're getting near the end.
Yeah, Paula is listening in Idaho. Thank you for your call, Paula. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Paula. Oh, I'm sorry, Paula. You're on the air with Stephanie Gray. Why are you pro-choice?
Because I believe that children should receive love and care. And if a child is unwanted before it's born, its chances are pretty poor of receiving love and care.
Paul, if I could ask you, you just used the term if a child is unwanted or the phrase. So if we were to take two of those words and say unwanted child, just a basic grammar lesson here, unwanted is the adjective, it's the description, and child is the noun. Person, place, or thing. Okay. So we have an unwanted child. Why would we eliminate the child, the noun? Why wouldn't we get rid of the unwantedness, which is a reflection of our feelings, emotions, or disposition? Why are we punishing the child by eliminating the child? Shouldn't we correct and reorient ourselves by eliminating our bad feelings, namely unwantedness?
How would you suggest that you impart your feelings on another person?
Good question. Fair question. So I would say two ways. One, we walk alongside the woman in crisis who doesn't think she can care for the child and offer her help and support to show her that if she feels her inability to care is grounded in the circumstances she's in, we'll work to make those circumstances better. And I know of a group, for example, an order of nuns called the Sisters of Life that do that very thing. They empower women to rise to the occasion of their motherhood. They even open one of their convents to allow women in crisis to live with them through the pregnancy and beyond, as they then work with that mother to help her with her education and career so that she can then live on her own. So not just merely giving a woman a fish, but teaching her to fish, as the saying goes. But if some women who you would walk alongside, such as the Sisters of Life doing that, really decide or feel that they don't have a warmth disposition to their child, they don't want to care for their child, that there are people lining up to adopt newborn infants. And so immediately upon birth, that mother could choose the path of adoption and make the choice about whether she wants an open or closed adoption. The open adoption being she's able to stay in touch with the adoptive family and they determine the parameters around which they would like contact with the child. Why not those things?
Yeah, I think what you're describing is, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it, ideal. If you could find a way to help someone understand. But I think that it's, you know, a little bit blue sky. Or a lot blue sky. I think there are so many mothers that don't take care of their children properly, and they thought they wanted those children. So now if we're, I think in some places you're right, there are people lining up to adopt children, but I also think there are hundreds of times more than that of children that never do get a great family, and they end up in the foster care program.
And I would suggest you're right about born older children. So there's a lineup for newborn infants, but tragically, yes, older children in the system often are waiting for adoptive homes. So here would be my question. In that situation, we have kids that are in less than ideal environments. Would we ever end the lives of those born children in foster care who do not have forever homes because their situations are bad?
No, of course not. I'm suggesting that we be prophylactic in having more children that are unwanted. And I agree, unwanted is a horrible term, but that's precisely the correct term. The mother does not want to have the child for whatever reason. And so we're thinking almost we can talk you into it and then expect that child's going to have a good life. And I don't think that's realistic.
Well, go ahead.
Child that's not cared for correctly.
So I agree with you. This is a problem when children are not cared for correctly. My question to you is how we can ever justify inflicting homicide as a solution. It seems to me that homicide is yet another form of abuse.
Yeah, I don't believe that abortion is murder.
So then that really is the issue. That at least is getting us to the heart of the issue and being more intellectually honest, that this isn't a question about the foster care system. This is a question of when life begins. Because if life begins at fertilization, then I think we're on the same page that you would agree that we just can't end the life of a human because their circumstances are less than ideal. We're going to have to work harder to make their circumstances better. So it sounds to me like you don't believe the act of abortion is ending the life of a human being. Is that correct?
I don't believe that a fetus that can survive outside the womb to end that life is murder. That's correct.
Okay, so what would you say a fetus is?
Well, I think that it's pretty well established at what point a being could exist outside of the womb. And then that is a person.
When is
and
that?
Killing that person would be murder.
When would you say a fetus can live outside the womb?
I believe, and I could be totally wrong, I'm thinking it's like it's 6 months into your term.
So, yeah, roughly people would say viability is 24 weeks, although babies have survived at 22 and 21 weeks. Maybe my next question then for you would be this. Do you believe in human rights?
Do I believe in human rights?
Yeah. Okay. So me too. So we both believe in human rights. And if women get women's rights and children get children's rights, would you say it follows that humans get human rights?
I think that children deserve rights they don't currently get in many instances, yes. And I think women have the right to choose what to do with their body, and particularly as it affects the next human being.
Well, and I think that's the key is there another human being there? My point about women's and children's rights is you get the rights by virtue of fitting in the category. So therefore, you admitted you believe in human rights, so you get the rights if you fit in the category. What's the category? Being human. It's not how old you are. It's not how independent you are. So if you say that we only protect children when they're viable, 21, 22, or 24 weeks, that's not believing in human rights. That's believing in age-based rights. That's believing in viability rights. And if that's what you believe in, then be honest about that, but don't claim that's human rights. Human rights say you get the rights by virtue of being a member of the human family. Your age doesn't matter. Your independence level doesn't matter. Your maturity doesn't matter. What matters is, are you a member of the human family? And so the fetus, in the case of having human parents, the fetus is a Latin term for young one and simply means they're offspring of the parents. And in the case of offspring of human parents, the fetus has to be human offspring. And if we believe in human rights, then that preborn human should have the same right to life as a born human. And therefore, if we would work to fix the circumstances of a born human who may be abused, then shouldn't we work to fix the circumstances of a preborn human who may be abused?
Interesting point. You believe that as soon as the egg is fertilized, it's a human being. And I don't believe that. I believe it's a fetus. Until it's born, it doesn't have its own set of rights.
Well, I think the question is not what I believe or what you believe, but what science teaches us about basic biology for when beings which reproduce sexually begin their lives. So it's not a religious belief I hold that life begins at fertilization. It is a scientific fact I embrace that life begins at fertilization because sperm and egg, before uniting, are mere parts of the male or female, but when they come together, a genetically distinct individual separate from the parents is formed, and that you and I and Cy can trace our beginnings back to that moment, that we were once 10-year-olds, we were once 5-year-olds, we were once infants, and we were also once fetuses and embryos, and that one-celled zygote had the DNA that all of us have today. At least when I was a zygote, I had my DNA. When you were a zygote, you had your DNA. And when Cy was a zygote, he had his DNA. So my point is, from that point forward, biology teaches us that the individual is consistent, but their age is inconsistent. Their development is inconsistent. In other words, that's what's changing. But what is constant is your uniqueness as being separate from your mother and father began then. So when we use the term embryo and fetus, we're just referring to a younger human. So my question would be, why should those of us who are older have a right to end the life of those who are younger?
Because their life is dependent. I mean, in this particular case, their life is dependent upon that person taking care of them. And I understand what you're saying. Once you're born, of course, you would assume people would take care of their children. But that's not accurate either.
So correct. And but let's go on. Sorry, go on.
Propagating a massive increase to a problem that already exists is intelligent. You know, a good decision for us to be making. Trying to reverse the laws that give people choices over that give women choices over their body, and create a lot more children that aren't wanted and won't be cared for. I don't think those are good decisions to make for society.
Okay, so with what you just said, two things you just said jumped out at me. One was creating more lives. You referenced that, as well as a woman controlling her own body. So I would say when a woman is pregnant and I'm suggesting she carry that pregnancy to term, I'm not suggesting she create a life. That life has already been created. So by objecting to abortion, I'm simply saying you can't destroy the life which already exists. And when you speak of a woman controlling her own body, the question then becomes, are we just talking about her body or is another body involved? So for example, if a woman doesn't want to be pregnant, okay, and she takes a pregnancy test and it's negative, would she ever call an abortion clinic and schedule an appointment with a negative test?
No, why would you?
Correct. But if she doesn't want to be pregnant and takes a test and it's positive, will she now possibly call an abortion clinic and book an appointment?
If she doesn't want to care for that child, yeah.
Right. So now here's the question. What is the negative pregnancy test telling her that's different from what the positive pregnancy test is telling her? Well, the negative test is basically saying it's only your body. No one else is here but you. And that's why she doesn't call the abortion clinic. The fact that she calls the abortion clinic when she has a positive test is like that positive test is saying to her, it's not just your body anymore. There's another body here. So if we believe in the right to control our own body, what about the right of the preborn child to control his or her body? And might I add, 50% of the time, that's a little female's body in there. And there are people who would choose abortion because they don't want female children. And they're trying to have male babies and not female babies. And so if we believe in women's rights, what about the rights of women in the womb to be born and not killed just because they're female?
But they can't exist on their own.
I agree they can't exist on their own, but my question for you is, could a born child exist on her own? If I gave birth to a baby, took the baby home, and then locked up my condo and left for 3 weeks and came back, would I find a living baby or a dead baby in my apartment?
Yeah, of course you'd find a dead baby.
What's that?
She said you'd find a dead baby.
I'd find a dead baby, because that's proof born children can't live on their own at certain ages. They need someone's body in some capacity to hold them, burp them, feed them, change them, love them. We have to use our bodies. It's not just the pre-born child that needs a body. Born children need bodies too. It just manifests differently, but we can't live without someone else's body enabling us to grow and develop.
Paula, thank you for spending the time with us and allowing that length of conversation. It was very, very helpful. Again, I want to remind everybody that tomorrow's open forum. Jimmy Akin, apologist extraordinaire, will be here for both hours. So if you have any questions, if you're a caller who couldn't get through today, then you can call tomorrow and we'll have the discussion that you wanted to have. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. Stephanie Gray.
Was that like a cough or a sneeze?
No.
Like, what was that?
That was a comment. I don't know what that was. Look.
A snoff. It was a snoff. He had a snoff.
I have a right to my body and it's weird reactions just like everybody else does. Stephanie Gray, Love Unleashes Life is the book. Love Unleashes Life is the website. Big Dude is the, what's the name of the ukulele?
Big Joy.
Big Joy. See you tomorrow.